that we partnered with National Parks. And so the scope of the project, the main scope of the project is a parking lot improvement. And if I had a laser pointer, which I don't,
come up here and
so I can bring this with me and go remote, and I'll work from the desktop here. And so the parking lot portion is over here. Most of these buildings have been removed. And what National Parks wants to do is they want to get rid of or significantly minimize this parking area here in front of the fort to try to return that look and feel to what it might have looked like, you know, before automobiles came on scene. And so what their long-term plan has been is to create a larger parking area here that visitors to the fort could use. They would still have a smaller drop-off area for tour buses or ADA folks who have ADA accessible needs, but really significantly downgrade vehicular parking. And so that's the parking lot piece of the project. And then the road improvement piece along Fifth Street, and that would be between Fort Vancouver Way and East Reserve, is to establish a multi-use path, a facility that would allow pedestrians and bicyclists to easily move through Fifth. And so what is contemplated, and I'm going to zoom in here a little bit, if you're familiar with this section of Fifth Street, there's a ribbon of concrete, an asphalt roadway, another ribbon of concrete, and then there's a sidewalk on the north side. But there's no walking area along the south side. And so what's envisioned is simply to use this ribbon of concrete, you know, with some striping and some delineation, and make that into this multi-use path. And the National Parks has been very, very instrumental in helping us scope this in such a way that we really don't change the look of Fifth Street. And so that's the idea behind using that existing ribbon of concrete. And then what that is, allows us to, you know, maintain all of the structure along the roadway without really changing the landscape much. And so with a FLAP grant, and the FLAP grant is actually administered through Federal Highways, through the Western Federal Lands Office, which happens to be right here. And so because of their proximity and because of their interest in the project, they've taken the lead on actually doing the design for us. So their engineers on staff are helping us get the design done, helping to figure out what that parking lot's going to look like, and then also kind of helping to figure out what these improvements on Fifth Street are going to look like. And we're at about a 30% design. So we've seen kind of the initial snapshot of what this might look like. And I think that was a plan set that was sent out. And I don't know, was that made available to the members? And if we have it, we can make sure you get an opportunity to see that. But it's, again, it's a 30% plan. It really just kind of gives a very initial snapshot of what these improvements could look like. So you'll get an idea of kind of what the parking lot's going to look like. And then you'll also see a kind of a cross-section of Fifth Street. The idea is to get through all of the design considerations this year. And then I think we're trying to tee this project up to where it would go to construction this next year. And the city had already planned on resurfacing this part of Fifth Street. The pavement is in need of resurfacing. So what we're going to do now is we're simply going to fold that resurfacing work into this project. And so that would essentially be the city's contribution to the project, or at least to the local match of the project, is the dollars needed to do the resurfacing on Fifth Street between Fort Vancouver Way and East Reserve. So that's all I had. I would certainly entertain any questions folks have.
I have a question. So
So right now it's 4 lanes of vehicular traffic, is that correct?
It's actually only 2 lanes, one lane in each direction.
Just parking now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's where all the cars were.
Yeah. And I know that National Parks wants to eventually shift focus to the north side of 5th and potentially redesign that to where it could be angled parking so we could get more vehicles parked there. They'd also like to get this sidewalk along the north side of 5th rebuilt. It's in a pretty state of disrepair. But it's a little bit of a balancing act because they still want to maintain the historical nature. So they're trying to figure out a way to have a new sidewalk that looks like an old sidewalk. And so we've been kind of having conversations with them about what that could potentially look like. But that would be at a future project.
So you're just doing the south.
So right now we're just focused on the south side.
I see. Thank you.
Hi, I have 2 questions. Just to follow up on that one. So on the south side, you'll resurface, and then will you make it a bike and walk lane? How will that be demarcated?
So the resurfacing would really be limited to the asphalt section. We'd leave the concrete section pretty much the way it is now, and then there would be some type of a delineation, both vertical as well as painted, that separates the multi-use path from the roadway. And then we'd likely have some type of symbols or stenciling that show, you know, that this is intended to be for bikes and pedestrians and not vehicles.
Okay.
We'll realize that probably as we get into the 60% plan to what that's going to look like. And again, trying to be very careful about what that looks like in context to the historical nature of the area.
And my second question is about the parking lot itself. Do you mind moving the image back to where you showed us? So right now, when you walk that pathway behind where the parking lot is going to go, over on the left, that pathway, no.
Oh, right here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You walk that path down south of that.
Right.
And there's that orchard, and you continue down, that takes you to the land bridge. So are you going to make, sorry, can you go back up to the parking lot? Are you going to make connections between that pathway and not on the south side, just move your cursor over by the trees on the south side? That path there, are you going to make connections between that pathway and the parking lot, or is it still going to be people need to?
I think there'll be a connection from the parking lot to that pathway, so that because again, that's part of the idea is not only will folks use this parking lot to visit the fort, but they'd also use it to access the trail system and the land bridge, and so. I'll make a note of going back and double checking that, but I believe as part of the scoping is we intended to add an additional connection to that trail directly off the parking lot.
And do you know how, sorry, one last question on my part. Do you know how many cars the parking lot will accommodate?
I don't, but if you look at those plans that will get sent out, there's a striping plan that shows the number of stalls. It's obviously significantly greater than what we have now, so it's definitely going to increase parking in the area.
So are there buildings on where the proposed parking lot's going to go? Are those buildings?
These buildings have been taken down.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Ford has been doing a number of different projects. Removing buildings, changing up where you drive, all those sorts of things. So they've known for quite some time they wanted to do this parking lot project, so the buildings were actually taken down, I believe, 2 years ago.
Okay.
And so right now this is just a blank slate to work from.
And excuse me, one more comment. I just, as for full disclosure, I actually work for Western Federal Lands, so I'm very familiar with this area. I walk here a lot. But I just wanted to make that known that I work for them. I'm not an engineer. I probably won't be involved in this project, but did want to mention that.
Okay. So I'm curious how extensive this is going to be along 5th Street. So how far east and how far west is this project going to go?
So right now the limits of the project are between Fort Vancouver Way on the west end and East Reserve on the east end. That's the scope of the grant that we submitted. The city, as a part of its complete streets effort, would eventually like to create a dedicated bike and walking facility along 5th Street further to the east. And so we would hope to to endeavor on that, either in future grant applications or as a part of the city's, own efforts to do bicycle facilities along city streets.
Has the city developed any kind of vision plan of the paths that they're thinking that this would be a part of?
So we're actually in the process of updating our transportation systems plan. That's a document that was last updated in 2004. And so as a part of that plan, we want to develop a complete biking and walking inventory or vision for the community, recognizing, where are the logical places where folks want to bike, both east, west, north, south, where do they want to walk, and finding some of these obvious routes that folks of all ages and abilities would want to use. And this Fifth Street obviously raises to the surface because it does access the national park. And so the belief or the thought is that, this would be a good facility to develop or a good corridor to develop.
And when you said both a vertical and a visual demarcation of the multi-use path, are we talking a curb, bollards?
Probably not bollards. It could be a curb with gaps in it to maintain the drainage. We've done that before. I know National Parks has a little concern about what that looks like. We've talked about maybe some type of a wand, some type of a polyethylene type wand that we could find a product that has a more park-like feel, historical type feel. Exactly. So my concern is just making sure that there's something there that physically not only demarcates but provides a barrier between the roadway and the walkway, and that's just important from a traffic safety, pedestrian, yeah, bike safety perspective.
And my last question is, the FLAP funding, does that have any kind of required review by, I know that National Park Service is involved and they're pretty capable with this stuff, but either by DAP or by, this is City of Vancouver and we're technically their authority by us, or is that part of those requirements at all?
It's
not part of complete streets.
Okay. So it's a federal funding source, and so because of that and also obviously because of the location of the project within the national parks, I believe it is subject to the Section 106 review. And so that'll be part of sometime between the 30% and the 60%. We'll start to initiate that review with the consulting agencies.
Okay. And on Section 106, I'm sure that we would be an interested party. And so, and thank you for coming. Does anyone else have any other questions?
No.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming and letting us know about this.
You're welcome. Thanks for me.
So we will go ahead and move on to our next item, the Riverview Gateway Project, the City of Vancouver, and John Collum.
Good evening, Vice Chair and other Commission members. My name is John Collum. I'm the Economic Development Principal Planner for the City of Vancouver and also serve as the Project Manager for the Waterfront Gateway Project. We did not recently change the name. It's been known as the Waterfront Gateway Project for the last year or so. Happy to be here this evening to give you an update on the project. So Waterfront Gateway site consists of approximately 6.4 acres of city-owned property that's southwest and the east of City Hall, as well as south of the Convention Center, so the blue area that's here. Oops. It's located between the downtown core and the new development that's been completed along the waterfront and is continuing to develop. The Waterfront Gateway site offers an exciting opportunity to connect both the activity areas of the waterfront with the historic core and other key important nodes of activity in downtown. There's also a focus on the need to ensure that certain uses can be accommodated in the site's future development, and those are some important public facilities that would allow us to replace the surface parking on the site now that currently services City Hall as well as the Convention Center and Hilton Hotel into structured parking. So we do need to put a structured parking garage on the site. And then also the possibility of expanding the Convention Center, and I'll talk about that a little bit later in the presentation. Connections to the areas around the site and an active mix of uses are also seen as important in the future development of the site. So what do we have at Waterfront Gateway? It's a total of 17 parcels of land, as I said, 6.4 acres. Primarily, it's all undeveloped. It's all undeveloped land except for surface parking, except for one building. The area that is shown here is a vacant area that just sits south of City Hall with the City Hall kind of visitor parking lot here. This is the western parking lot that services both the tenants of the upper floors of City Hall as well as city staff that work in the building. This area that's just to the west of this parking lot has recently been expanded into surface parking as well. And then over on the southeast corner of the site is a parking lot that is actually under a parking license, as we call them, to the Convention Center in Hilton for overflow parking for the Convention Center or for hotel guests, as well as for parking for the Weber Building. And then the Weber Building is this building here that sits fronts on Columbia just south of the Convention Center building and also has a parking lot just on the other side. This is the Columbia facade here. So blocks, we've kind of broken the 17 parcels into blocks just for planning purposes, but the block X and Y were acquired by the city in 2010 as part of its acquisition of the Columbian office building, which is now City Hall, and also the parking lot that had been built just to the west and then the vacant property south of City Hall. So that was a 2010 acquisition. Primarily for the city to have an opportunity to build or to move into the city, what is now the City Hall building. And then I've only been in Vancouver for a couple of years, but I understand that the Columbian had some plans to do some fairly significant mixed-use development on the parcels that now serve as the parking lot for City Hall and then the vacant site south of City Hall. But, of course, with their bankruptcy and the sale of the property, that did not move forward. What we call Block Z, which is where the Weber Building is located, its parking lot, and then the parking lot that the Hilton and the Convention Center share here, that was acquired in 2004 with the idea that the Convention Center was just about ready to open, and typically Convention Centers are looking at expansion opportunities in the future, and the idea was that the Convention Center might need to think about expanding 5 to 7 years after its opening. Of course, we're 15 years down the road now, and we're only starting to look at a potential expansion. And it's stuck. There we go. Okay. So the triangle here shows us the properties kind of more close up on an aerial that we're talking about here. Of course, we've got City Hall, we've got the Convention Center in Hilton. In addition to connecting this triangle to the waterfront development, as well as the historic downtown core that's to the north and northeast of the site, there are some other key connections that we'd like to do with the development of the site. One could be to find a way, maybe in its development or its character, that it would have a connection to Fort Vancouver and the east side of the portion of downtown, which is on the east side of I-5, and also to Main Street in particular. The Vancouver's Downtown Association kind of is the entity that kind of manages the Main Street area, kind of oversees it, and is doing a lot of new activities over the last couple of years. in recognition that they have to be ready, you know, as the waterfront development continues, and they want to share the resources of the visitors that are coming to the new waterfront developments. So having that connection between those two areas is very important, and it would go through the waterfront gateway site. We'd also like to take advantage of being right across the street from Esther Short Park and that great facility and all the activity that happens there and how we can connect that to the waterfront. The waterfront park, the new waterfront park, is a great amenity to have in downtown, and it's being heavily used up to this point. We want to keep that going, but we want to tie these kind of facilities that we have in downtown in a way that people want to walk from one amenity to the other to enjoy it. And then, of course, we have the Renaissance Trail, which will experience some improvements with the port's development of its parcels along the waterfront to connect to the trail as it goes eastward along the Columbia. So some great public resources in play already, and the opportunity here is to link and connect them with development of the triangle. In 2019, City Council requested that the City Center Redevelopment Authority, or I'll call it the CCRA, be engaged to take a leading role in the future development of Waterfront Gateway. CCRA is a public agency. It was established in 2006. It provides oversight and guidance regarding downtown redevelopment efforts. It is our redevelopment agency in some respects. It has a 7-member board. It's appointed by City Council. They have broad authority, including the ability to purchase and manage property, secure financing, issue bonds, and similar items related to revitalization. They haven't really been doing a lot of that since they were created in 2006, because when they came on board, the Downtown Redevelopment Authority, which was in place and kind of spun off separately, have been involved in developing the Hilton and Convention Center and has since been managing it on behalf of the city. So the CCRA really has kind of served as a body to do design review for downtown projects as they come along. They're specifically required to do design review for the new waterfront projects within the Graymore master plan area, as well as the Terminal 1 master plan for the port. And then they also review what we call multifamily tax exemption program projects when a developer within a designated portion of downtown wants to get that exemption. Their project has to come through the CCRA board for approval or for recommendation of approval before it goes to council for final approval. So that's the type of work they have been doing in the past. In 2019, council wanted to give them an opportunity to kind of spread their wings. It's an agency that has a combination of commercial service professionals, developers, people that are involved in the finance industry here in Vancouver, and other interested parties that make up that 7-member board. We also have somebody that actually is a former executive with the Hilton Corporation, knows a lot about the hotel industry, and has been a big benefit to the DRA. A lot of our members also serve on the DRA and has been involved with that board as well. So in 2019, we added the Waterfront Gateway project area to the work plan for CCRA at the City Council request. In CCRA taking on that leadership role in Waterfront Gateway, we thought that it would be beneficial for them to have a more formal relationship with City Council by entering into a memorandum of understanding. It was approved this past November. We spent probably several months working on it, working between city staff as well as the CCRA members. And it formally designates the CCRA by the City Council to take the lead to manage the planning and development of the Waterfront Gateway project area, with the idea that both entities wanted to make sure that some certain ingredients were considered in the future development, and those include creating a branded destination district that connects these key activity nodes that I mentioned, make it an active, urban, inviting, and mixed-use environment with a lot of connectivity for pedestrians in particular, include a combination of many uses that you expect to find in a downtown redevelopment area, and then the public amenities that I mentioned with the structured parking, as well as the potential expansion of the convention center, as well as other public amenities that might come forward in a typical downtown redevelopment environment. So the MOU actually sets forth that the city would support the CCRA through the allocation of staff resources and consultant funding. I'm a city employee. I'm the person assigned to work with the CCRA on this project. We have a budget to where we've been able to hire consultants to work on the project for the last several months. The board will give ongoing direction and advice to designated staff to manage the daily activities of the project. It will also serve as the city's lead negotiator. It'll select a master developer, and it will review and recommend the plans and the agreements that would come out of the negotiations and then make a recommendation to council. Council is retaining approval of the final agreements that come out of this deal. So staff's been working over the last several months to develop the MOU to get it approved back in November. We also started working with the CCRA board on how to approach the development of the site. In early summer last year, the board opted to select a master developer for the site, which upon selection would work jointly with the board and the community to master plan the site. The master developer would be determined through a request for qualifications process, or an RFQ. So in preparation for the release of an RFQ, the city and the CCRA have been engaged in a preliminary visioning process to help articulate a community vision for the site that would be included in the RFQ, as well as help identify the public benefits and amenities desired for the site as redevelopment occurs. Now, this was done at a somewhat kind of conceptual level. We do want to, we're not doing formal master planning with this visioning process. We're coming up with a message that we want to send to prospective developers as to what the community would like to see on the site. We want to leave some opportunity for creativity on the developer side and the community side down the road. So the visioning process, we actually engaged the architecture firm of Sara out of Portland to guide us through this. They put together a series of workshops, open houses, and a wrap-up session with the board to both gauge what the board's interest was in the site in the future of it, as well as what the community would like to see happen there as well. The purpose was to envision how Waterfront Gateway can contribute to the common good while balancing private and market interest as part of the development. We looked at this through the lens of what's generally known as 8 design principles for successful downtowns. We looked at imagery to gauge whether community members and board members actually liked these images versus not liking them. Maybe they liked components but didn't like others. Some examples of some of the imagery that we looked at were other destination districts in other cities in the country. I've got a couple examples there, the dairy block in Denver and the distillery district in Toronto. And then as the formats that we used were an open house, kind of in the middle portion of the visioning process. We also had online feedback through our portal that the city has for that. And the format that we used with the open house, we actually had an outdoor event which gave the community the opportunity to come and do some little interactive activities to come up with some ideas for what might happen on the site as well. All in the idea of trying to figure out what does it mean that this could be a real downtown district destination for everybody in Vancouver and the region. So what resulted out of that was a vision statement that we would propose that would go in the RFQ. And it just simply states that the city and the CCRA have a mutual interest in planning and developing the site to create a branded destination district that connects other key activity areas. And then those are listed there. We want it to be active urban, mixed use, strong connectivity for pedestrians, include a combination of uses, would provide those public benefits for the garage as well as the potential expansion of the convention center, but also other public benefits as well. It needs to be accessible to all abilities, ages, and income levels, and it creates an environment that will attract the Vancouver community and beyond. Now, to go along with those, and I apologize that looks like my photos didn't make it onto this one. Hopefully it showed up in your packet. But I included some of the images that were very positive in this process for the community as we brought it forward. But in addition to the vision statement, we wanted to give some more specific considerations that developers would look at. And these would be put out there for consideration both as the developers were considering this and responding to the RFQ, as well as kind of set forth a path that the board and the community would use to work with the developer to master plan the site down the road. Some of those include that we wanted a district that's uniquely Vancouver, not one that's Portland, not one that's Spokane or Seattle or Tacoma. It needs to be purely Vancouver. We want places where people can linger outdoors for a large majority of the year. Wayfinding signage. We'd like to see an anchor destination. Some of the ideas that came out of that from the public included maybe having a public carousel in the midst of this, having maybe a bowling alley, maybe a place where a plaza that is programmed in a way that's different than Esther Shore Park or maybe the Waterfront Park, something that's a little bit more urban and might be more music-oriented maybe than just events. One of the things that came out of it that I'm sure it's important to the commission here is that the public wants us to explore the practicality of retaining the Weber Building as part of the project. Also, we wanted to look for housing options that are affordable to a broad spectrum of people. Also, accommodate the sites for those public facilities are important. Increased employment in downtown so that people can both live and work in downtown or live in Vancouver and work in downtown. And then emphasize high quality. That's in the area of placemaking and the uses. The other area that we pulled information from the board and the public was for development and partnership considerations. This is how would we approach figuring out what could get built on here. Some of the highlights in that area is that we have these goals that we want to be committed to. But the future development has to be economically viable and feasible in order to move forward. And that's important in order to get these public benefits that we'd like to get out of a project that's a little bit more developer-driven when the development occurs. We want to balance public amenities with benefits for private development. I'm sorry, public amenities and benefits with the private development, I should say. We want broadly shared economic opportunity and prosperity. We want to capitalize on the opportunity zone designation that we have in this area. I don't know if you're familiar with what that tool is. It's a tax incentive that was passed as part of the Tax Act back in 2017, and it gives property owners and businesses an opportunity to get investment for capital gains that are deferred but then invested into real estate developments or business development. And we also want to make sure that we're recognizing that the site's development cannot fulfill all interests. I mean, we had a ton of ideas for this site that came out of the public process, but it's obvious that not everything can fit on 6 acres. But we do want to find a developer that's going to be creative and help us get as far as we can with those ideas. So, as I mentioned earlier, there are certain public facilities that we need to accommodate on the site. The city will need to reserve space on the site to accommodate those. The problem at this point is we don't know exactly how much space we need to reserve. As we were wrapping up the visioning process, we've now turned over to these special kind of studies that we're doing to figure out what those public facilities bring with them. The one on the parking garage is we're modeling some various parking garage sizes based upon the needs that we have to provide parking for city employees and for the tenants at City Hall, as well as for the convention center, including if it expands, as well as maybe some surrounding partners that might want to invest in a parking garage on this site. We're working toward a shared model so that we can get use out of every parking space as close to 18 to 24 hours a day so that we're not building a lot of parking spaces. We're using spaces that are smartly used and managed. The convention center expansion feasibility analysis, we're in the middle of, we have interviews next week with a short list of firms that have applied to fill that need, and we believe that we'll be selecting somebody probably toward the end of the month, and the study would occur between March and May. And I will note something I didn't note before. I think we believe in the world of convention centers today that it's not if you're advised to do anything with your convention center now, it's to kind of turn it inside out, which is great for our convention center and the future expansion, because we want that convention center to be a really good member of downtown. We want its users to go other places when they come in downtown. And if you've been inside, and I'm sure all of you have, at some point you kind of go in and you come out almost the same door. There's no real connection to the outside, and this is a real great opportunity for us to kind of rethink the way the convention center is being utilized, operated, designed at this point, and if it's expanded, that the expansion could have a relationship to what's built in the rest of Waterfront Gateway. Some other things that we're doing, we're collecting property information on these properties that developers would be interested in knowing, phase ones and twos as an example. We're also doing a cultural resource evaluation of the Weber Building so that we know what its background is. We're starting the drafting of the RFQ. We're reaching out to prospective developers, because when we release the RFQ, we want to make sure that there's some interested parties out there waiting for this. And we're also talking to interested design firms. We think that the RFQ will require that the developers will have to have a design team put together as part of their submittal. We're also touring some related projects. We are going up to Seattle with some of the board members in March to look at some projects related to their convention center and the waterfront, but also to look at some historic properties that have been integrated into mixed-use developments up there as well. So a lot of background work to kind of get our board better prepared to kind of handle this project as we move into the RFQ phase. So I'll wrap up with the target dates that we've been working on. As I mentioned, we've wrapped up the visioning for the RFQ back in November. We'll be refining that as we get information about the parking in the convention center feasibility analysis. Parking analysis, we think, will come together in April. The convention center study will happen from March to May. We hope to go to council. I think we just scheduled our council workshop in June to get them up to speed on what all this is about and what we plan to include in the RFQ. We hope to issue the master developer RFQ over the summer and then select a developer probably in the third or fourth quarter of this year, get started on what we're calling the master development package. What that would include is the master plan, but also any agreements with the developer on properties that would be sold or leased to them for development, but also a plan for how we move forward with the parking garage as well as the convention center expansion. And then the idea is that once we start work on that within about a year, we want to have that master development package ready to go to council for approval. That date, no later than the fourth quarter of 2021, is loosely tied to one of the targets in the Opportunity Zone incentive, and to ensure that if developers want to utilize that as a funding source, we think it's a good opportunity for them to do it here. That they'll have the advantage of getting a project before council before a specific date hits at the end of 2021. So I hope that wasn't more than you were expecting, but I wanted to kind of come and give you kind of the full spectrum of what we're doing on the project, and would be happy to answer any questions that you have now.
Thanks. I have a question about the Weber Building. Mm-hmm. So does that fall over under your organization's purview, the Weber Building, the future of the Weber Building, or how does that all interact with what you're doing?
It is owned by the city.
Okay.
So it's part of, it's just like the other parcels on the site. It'll be part of the planning that we'll be doing on the site. At this point, we've got one of the reasons we've turned our attention to the convention center expansion possibilities as well as the parking garage is we don't think that they'll take up a majority of the site, but they'll take up portions of the site that we'll need to be a little clear-minded with developers when we put it out there for consideration. So I think we need to find out what those two studies show us. In particular, the convention center, as you know, is just to the north of the Weber building. So if we need to do an expansion, we'll need to understand what size it needs to be and where it needs to be in relation to the existing building. So until we have the feasibility analysis completed, we can't really move on to any type of site planning related to that. I think we'll be getting to that, I think, in the next 2 to 3 months.
So how do you envision in all that? I mean, I know the planning process is in the future and stuff, but what could be the potential impacts on the Weber building as a result of all that? Could the Weber building be taken down, or what is the thinking process on that?
I think all opportunities are still open as far as the Weber building. Demolition is a possibility. I think in some respects it could be tied to the need to expand the convention center. But I think there are other opportunities that we can look at for the Weber building as well. That's retaining it, integrating it into the new development. Let's just say there's been no decision made on the future of the Weber building at this point. I think we need good information on the site and the things that we need to accomplish on it before we can go to a more serious consideration of what happens with the building. We have a tenant in the building now. Their lease was recently extended. I believe it goes until the end of 2022. So it will actively be used as an office building as it is now for the next 3 years.
I have a couple of questions. This property is all currently city property, is that correct?
There's one parcel in the 17 that technically is owned by the Vancouver Public Facilities District, which is an entity created by the city, okay. Generally controlled by the city.
So is your vision that as you develop the property to its multiple uses and those that are potentially private uses, city's going to sell that property to get it back on the tax rolls, and it will become a contributor to the tax revenue base in the city. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's one of the financial...
Long-term land lease or something?
Yeah, that's one of the financial advantages of getting it developed and back on the tax rolls is the benefits that we get from that. But I, you know, in my year of working on this up to this point, planning to work on it and then actually working on it, I would say that the discussion has been more about what can we create here? How can we create a part of downtown that it's a little bit of a donut hole, which is always a great thing to have if you have control of what can happen there. And I think through the city's ownership, we have that. So I think it's probably is more of an opportunity to make sure that we can create a great district downtown that's going to be part of its future and enhance everything around it. More so than, you know, the advantages that we might get from it being developed just for the sake of development. I do think that the city will look at all options, whether or not the land would be leased to a developer or whether it would be sold outright. If you follow some of the other redevelopment projects in downtown, the latest one that the city is working on is Block 10, and it has opted to lease that property long term instead of selling it outright. I think that's going to be an open negotiation with developers when we get there.
I have a couple of questions, just minor ones, actually. In terms of the convention center, our current convention center, has it reached its maximum ability to accommodate people who are coming into our city? Is there a reason that we are focusing so much on its expansion? And can you tell us a little bit more about what's the purpose? Is it that we're not able to accommodate who wants to come here, or is it that we're hoping more people will come here? And is there a possibility that that could backfire?
The facility hasn't reached its capacity of use from a daily basis, but primarily because we don't have enough hotel rooms within walking distance of it. So the Hilton was undersized for the size of the convention center that we have. The hotels that are under construction on the waterfront, and then there's one that's likely to start construction within the next quarter that's going to be right across the street from the entrance off Columbia, the Hyatt Place. Those will actually bring in more hotel rooms that will both put the convention center in a position to take on some meetings and conventions that it hasn't been able to have before. But as we have, I think it's 425 more rooms coming online within that, you know, 2 to 3 block radius, we think that there's an opportunity there to expand it. But in expanding it, it gives us an opportunity to look at how it's operating now and how we might want to reprogram it, redesign it, renovate it in a way to kind of get more out of it than we're getting out of it now. And a lot of it, just like with the parking garage idea, that we want to share those spaces as much as we can. I think that our thinking is that we want to see how, you know, we're not just building an expanded convention center here and a parking garage here and private development over here. We want to figure out how they can kind of share resources and maybe management and ownership or what have you. We think that there are lots of good things that are happening out there in the world of mixed-use development that we could probably make happen here in a very positive way.
And then my follow-up question to that is about the parking. You mentioned the individuals and who is going to use that parking space. And right now the parking that's there, to my understanding, is a primary spot for people who come to our markets on the weekends. Would that still be open for those?
Yes, I think it would be. Yeah, if you consider that the spaces that I think the market occupies on the weekend are the ones that the city staff is not using on Saturday and Sunday, well,
it would still be open to the.
It would be potentially a little bit further walk from you know, especially since the farmers market moved a little further away this past year. Mm-hmm. But that's the idea there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, one other question. So one of your last slides, the header is, I think it's page 15. Just curious about the bottom, the southern part that butts up against the railroad. I know that you don't have a plan in place, but the intention is to connect this section of the city to the waterfront and other developed areas.
This might be a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that one's just as good. I guess my question is, I know the plan isn't in place, but what's the thinking? Since that's right against the railroad, how would people make that, how would we easily make that segue as pedestrians and people who want to move from place to place easily?
By concentrating on the tunnels that were pushed through when the berm was redesigned, you know, what was it, about 10 years ago now, I think, Grant, Esther, and Columbia, by emphasizing those as the pass-through areas, and by directing traffic within the development that happens on the site to those spots. We're continuing to work with another architect on maybe a visualization that we'll put in the RFQ. We just had a meeting with him today. One of the things we talked about is if you think that there's a real great entrance to the waterfront park that's just off the screen here, if you go all the way down Esther. It's a little compromised now because of the hotel construction that's going on. But when that's done, and if you go down there now, it's still there, you could see it. We kind of think that that's a great way to kind of get people by putting, maybe adding something to the entrance to the park that's of some, you know, maybe public art or something that kind of draws people's attention. Once you get under the berm and you see that you're there, and then we would do the same thing here so that when you get underneath the berm, you're then seeing something pretty amazing for you to try here. And then that's on a path that takes you through the site in some way to get you to Esther Shore Park, or to take you back through the development over here to get you to some great new development that's on the Columbian parking lot down the road, that type of thing. I think it's emphasizing, it's not one of the things that the port has a really interesting project that's been brought forward by their selected developer for their 4 blocks down here. It's a group, Lincoln Property Company, LPC West. So they've got the 2 blocks here that are just south of ours, but separated by the railroad. And their pre-application, they are showing a crossover at the their building above grade parking. And excuse me for this extended discussion on this, but they're building above grade parking, but they're kind of putting their residential and office buildings on top of it. And then they're kind of creating a stair step effect so that you can kind of climb a terrace area up to the top so you can get a great view of the river. But when you get to the top, what their vision is that there would be a pedestrian bridge across the railroad berm that would then connect to whatever we build at about that spot right there. That could be our parking garage. It could be, let's say, an expanded convention center with a public amenity that's outside on the roof. Lots of different ideas there.
Okay.
So I think it's tricky. It's tricky. One of the terms that came out today in our little session was, do you embrace or erase the railroad? Because there are many ways to do both, and there are advocates for embracing it because it's kind of cool to watch freight trains and passenger trains come by, and others would just assume erase it because of the noise or the fact that maybe they don't like trains. They're dirty. So,
Mr. Collum, would you indicate where the Hyatt Hotel that you mentioned is going in?
It is going on that L. Whoops. It's going on this L-shaped property here.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, can you show that again? I was looking down.
Convention Center, where it says Vancouver Convention Center entrance is about right there, and it's going right here.
That's across from the Smoke and Oak?
Yes, Smoke and Oak's there. This is the, is there a radio station of some sort there or something? In that building?
I think there was.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
I think the name is still on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
What kind of station?
I think there used to be a radio station out of that building because I think, if I remember right, there's still signage for it. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember a tower there.
I think that our thinking is that we'll probably learn through the Convention Center feasibility analysis whether or not it makes sense for the Hilton to expand. But I think we believe with the 425 units or rooms that are coming on board just in this area, that hotel on this site is probably unlikely. Of all the land uses, that's the most unlikely one.
I had a couple of questions. The process that you've described so far sounds like CCRA has quite a bit of discretion and pretty prominent role in it. So I'm curious if any of the members have a background in history or cultural resources of any sort that they're bringing to this process.
I probably can only vouch for the president, Richard Keller, who serves on the board of the Historic Trust. I believe that's correct. Is that right? On the board of the Historic Trust, yes.
Okay. And, you've talked a lot about making it uniquely Vancouver. I'm also curious that that's a board that you don't have to live in Vancouver to be on, right?
I believe you're correct.
Do you know about what the makeup of that board is of Vancouverites versus
I believe there's only one person that doesn't either live or work in Clark County.
Okay.
It's only one of the seven, I believe. There's a combination of people that might just work in Clark County or in Vancouver and others that both live and work here.
And that's, they're
or
all
might be retired.
Board. They're all volunteers.
That's right, yes.
I think one of the things that we've seen as the new construction goes in and downtown is that none of it's uniquely Vancouver. I mean, all of it could be in any city in America. And so I really like this idea that we want something uniquely Vancouver. And I think that that's something that our body can play a great role in because the historic fabric of this city is really what makes, I think, Vancouver is one of the big things. It's not the only thing, but one of the things that makes Vancouver unique. And the reason that I bring this up is you've talked a lot about connections, and I think that that's also great, you know, how we connect these pieces, because our downtown right now does have a very disjointed feel. But one of the places where that disjointedness is the most pronounced is in our heritage locations. And the connection, the decisions about connections that are made here, since we've got some pretty critical hubs, especially with Esser Short and all of the activity that's going on at the waterfront, is going to have a pretty big impact on what happens in the rest of downtown and how those connections work. And so I'm curious, you're doing a cultural resources examination of the Weber Building, and I think that that's great. Is there any kind of, not that level of intensity, but some kind of examination of the cultural resources more broadly around and the potential for those connections and what could be highlighted, and I guess really looking outside of the box to look at the impact that has on some of these other things, because there could be a great opportunity to use the connections here to reinforce the connections of what's going on here into, say, Heritage Overlay District number 2, which is that Main Street district, or, you know, down Evergreen to the Providence Academy site and then on to Fort Vancouver.
We are not doing them per se with this project, but there's a sister project. We're calling it sister because they're going to be kind of simultaneous. We're going to be doing the update of the Vancouver City Center Vision Plan later this year, or starting that process. And we believe that survey probably will be done to some extent through that plan. So I think by the time we get to the point of developer selection and then going into the master plan, we may have that resource to build on, to think about that in the world of connections as we start to work with the developer and the community on the master plan.
I think it might be really useful to accelerate that part of that plan so that this really can benefit from that, because I think we've seen what happens when you get too far along in planning and haven't accounted for some of those things early on. They just don't get accounted for. So I think that would be a great thing, and, you know, bringing in the expertise to be able to do that. I think, you know, looking at the nature of those connections and what makes kind of the historic part of Vancouver work and that pedestrian scale, and I mean, yeah, you're not going to reproduce that here. You're not looking at one story, you know, or, you know, 1-4 story construction. That's not what I think most of us would expect. But learning the lessons that part of town has, especially, you know, again, looking at most of the development that we've seen in downtown over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of sacrificial first floor development where, you know, we get all of our economic activity on 2 and above, and if one stays vacant, that's not a big deal. And I think to reinforce those connections here, and especially to acknowledge the buildings that are already there, that can't happen in this part of it.
I think you're making some very excellent points in the sense that an observation of the current level and style of development in downtown, we should always look at that and see, can we do better? I think we've had some chats with the board about that. We can do better. And if we're going to be uniquely Vancouver, we really should be doing better. Some of the ideas for the signature attraction or some of the publicly accessible areas are things that you could do in this district have been history inspired. There was an idea that was put forth to do a beer museum as an example. Probably because of Lucky Lager's existence here. Does the Lucky Lager existence within the nearby area but not necessarily on the site itself, could that be an inspiration for the district even? That's been suggested at some of our meetings as well.
And I think with something like that, you know, doing that kind of, you know, heritage investigation, you know, the museum right now has their brewery exhibit. You can see, you know, it's about a lot more than just the Lucky Lager. And, you know, if that's a direction that there's actually a lot there that you could leverage, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
In the plan. My last question is there a way for us as a commission to participate more collaboratively in this process so that we can bring
know, some of these thoughts about the connections to the heritage area. Because, I mean, you know, we got our bugaboo, and everybody else has their bugaboo, you know, and, but so that we can bring that particular one. I think looking for ways that we can participate, you know, more formally, I think would be useful, especially in addressing, you know, some of the things that I've mentioned and some of the other commissioners as well.
Right. No, I think we intend to keep you in the know as we move forward with the project. You can go. We have our online portal that we use to still active. You can still sign up for updates. We haven't had an update, I think, since we wrapped up the visioning. But we probably will have an update sometime within the first quarter just to let the public know a lot of what I just told you. Mm-hmm. The portal is called Be Heard Vancouver. If you just Google that, then go into it and look under Projects, Waterfront Gateway Project, then you can sign up to be kept in the know there. And I'll make sure that we have Sharon, Jackie, and the members of the commission on my interested parties list, so that you get the information when I distribute it. I think from that point on, I mean, we're happy for you to bring representatives to the board meetings. Mm-hmm. That we were supposed to start televising the CCRA board meetings. They didn't meet in January, and I don't know this. I don't think the system's ready for the February meeting, but sometime this year, their meetings are going to be televised, so you can keep in the know there a little bit if you can't get down for our meetings, which are 11:30 on the third Thursday of every month, I believe. But I think it's important that you stay in touch with us when we go through the developer selection process, and also when we convene the community to go through the master planning process. So, and I'm going to take what you just gave me in the sense of this heritage connection, this mm-hmm. idea, and see how we can potentially integrate it into this vision statement so that we can put that there as a consideration. That's what we're calling them, considerations, without saying you must do this. We're trying to put them in a way that we give the developer broad spectrums of ideas that we think are important to the community to think about as they want to go after these properties.
Yeah, I think with RFQs like that, you can easily frame it in terms of you have to think about it, but we're not going to tell you what you have to do about it. It has to be incorporated,
right,
but we're not going to tell you how. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, some of these developers can come up with some, designers can come up with some really interesting ideas.
I think that's very good.
Sometimes. Do we have any other questions? Thank you so much, Mr. Cullen, for coming to talk with us and give us an update on this project. So we will go ahead and move on to new business. Our next meeting and presentations from DAP.
Sorry, I'll repeat that. So we invited DAP to come. It's Greg Griffith and Stephanie Jolivet, and this is in response to our letter to them about intangible cultural heritage. They're going to come give a presentation about the State Heritage Preservation Plan, and Stephanie is coming at our invitation to give it like a training on the SEPA process for historic preservation. And we're sending out invitations to the planning directors in all the cities and counties in Clark County, tribal organizations, and see who wants to come. So that's all I got there.
Are we going to hold it?
Here.
Here?
Yeah. It'll be a regular meeting, but it'll be 1 hour for the preservation plan and 1 hour for the SEPA. So hopefully we have no other cases. If there is a case, we may have to start at 5:30. The county won't have any cases, but if the city does, we'll have to accommodate it somehow. So we're thinking we would try to push them off till April, but if they can't, it'll be a 5:30 start.
Okay.
Can I just jump to the next?
Unless there are any questions.
So the 2020 Certified Local Government grant application window opened yesterday. We have till end of April. They have $110,000. This is a no matching fund year, so this is a good year to apply. Their priorities for funding, I'll just read them off. It's the citywide historic context statement. This is if you were going to do a cultural resource inventory. It's the introductory part. So if you were going to do a themed cultural resource inventory on mid-century properties, you would have the research done and written your piece on.
Excuse me, Sharon, how much did you say was available?
110,000 total.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the citywide historic context statements for, you wouldn't normally do a cultural resource inventory countywide, just every era, every building. You'd narrow it down either a certain geographic area or a certain development period. So that's one option that Jackie and I were kind of hoping to put out there to you, something we would be interested to have grant funding for, possibly hire a consultant to do that. Another is products and our activities to plan for the protection of historic properties in the event of a disaster, like a local emergency plan. Another priority area is survey of underrepresented resources or resources highly symbolic for one group that are not understood, like resources from the 70s, Chinese American resources, LGBTQ related resources. Another is local preservation program website, but that we already have website developers that have been applied for us. And the fifth is GIS projects intended to make historic information available to the public. We also couldn't do that because we have our own GIS. So of the five, we're hoping that there's interest in a citywide historic context statement, whether that's the mid-century properties, whether it's geographic areas in the county that were never included in the 1990 cultural resource inventory. Just kind of play around with some of these ideas. And
sorry, since I'm new, can you give me some context for this kind of grant? Is it something that comes up every year for CLGs?
Grant. Okay. Yeah, issued by DAP.
And it's for our state or it's for the country?
Grant.
Okay.
State grant for only for certified local governments.
Okay.
We've received grant funding in the past to do things. We did, didn't we do the farm buildings? It was an assessment of the structural integrity of the farm buildings, what renovation and repair would cost.
So does the commission write it, or do you all, or
write,
we all
write it
together?
The direction, and then we write it. Okay. We research and write it. And we usually try to write the grants in such a way that we could hire a consultant to do the work.
Advancing the inventory could be nice. I think one thing that we might consider that kind of blends two of those is a survey of unreinforced masonry buildings in the county. Maybe some sort of classification of risk levels with them. I'm a little bit apprehensive about this idea because of what we've seen in Portland with ascribing scarlet letters to unreinforced masonry buildings, but information is also good.
Would you lump that together? Would that be lumped into one?
I think you maybe could. What are the sizes of the grants that usually come out? You said 110 total, but
yeah, we got a grant for 18,000 to do the farm survey of the farm buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They range. I wouldn't. You get more than that, you know.
Okay. So I think we should have a conversation about other.
Can you say the ones, the ones that you said you think are viable so we can just
okay.
keep that clear?
Citywide historic context statement, which is a written history and context of a geographic area or resource type within a geographic area. It's helpful to have this prior to the actual survey of projects. Two, products or activities to plan for the protection of historic properties in the event of a disaster. Examples include preparation of a local emergency plan, response recovery plan for historic properties, a survey of unreinforced masonry buildings, workshops, website development, retrofitting cultural and historic resources to minimize damage from a disaster event. That was all one, just examples. And the third is a survey of underrepresented resources, recent past associated with a particular ethnic community, or resources highly symbolic for one group that are not understood by those in vocal majorities, such as resources from the 1970s, Chinese American resources, LGBTQ related resources.
I think on a related one that also relates it back to our demolition, a plan for what happens to buildings that are damaged by natural or other disasters. Oftentimes, that's a very vulnerable time, and the desire to protect public safety sometimes proceeds in a way that resources are lost when they don't need to be. that's that relationship to what we're already doing is a nice little synergy.
How do you want to reach a decision? Like, we can't really wait till March because that eats up a lot of our potential research and writing time. Do you want to email us? How do we get to a...
I think they're going to have to decide at a meeting. So
that'll be the March meeting. That would give us a month to research it.
Is that enough time?
Not really, but...
we decide tonight?
Yeah, so is there a reason why you can't talk about it? Or do you want to look more into it?
Running up against... John's deadline.
I would entertain a motion about making a decision on this tonight.
I think we should go ahead, as you suggested, with unreinforced masonry buildings. What was the other part of it?
So a survey of unreinforced masonry buildings and their characteristics.
What about, could we somehow tie this in on the demolition side? Do we need to know more about buildings that are coming up for demolition, and could they help us identify some of that so we'd have a better baseline of what the concern is for the county? Is that even feasible, or is that too broad? Should we limit it to the unreinforced? That was the one thing I was thinking about.
So are you thinking more broadly about disasters or any kind of demolition?
Survey we're concerned about demolition lack of ability to identify it in advance.
So you're like endangered.
Could we do some kind of survey of endangered buildings or something like that? Would that be a value?
I think it could be.
Is it feasible?
I think the feasibility of it is getting access to that kind of information.
Well, then I'll move that we... go ahead, please.
So building on what you said, though, because one of the priorities that they listed was... and for the protection of historic properties in case of disasters. So couldn't we tie them together if we did an inventory? And then you said you were kind of concerned
mm-hmm.
with a scarlet letter, but with the intention of how do we mitigate damage or what would our plan be? So we're identifying them, but then we have a plan on how to safeguard, or is that too much to take on in one project or one?
These are private properties?
I'm just looking back at my note from what you said.
Yeah.
So the plan for the protection of historic properties in case of a disaster is how I summarized it.
Right, but wouldn't you be, so a lot of these unreinforced masonry buildings are private properties, so
So this was more for public?
Oh, for public buildings.
That's my question.
Oh.
I guess it is. That the plan we would put in place for, can I make that connection?
Well, the problem with any plan like that, without funding behind it, it's almost a meaningless document. Well, we could come up with some advice to owners of what they could be doing to protect their property. But that's all we could do, unless we had some deep pockets, I think, as a practical matter.
Yeah, and the thing that I brought up earlier about demolition after a disaster, with our new code updates, ours is better than most jurisdictions in that it actually does require the building official to take a beat before just ordering demolition. Yeah. So it's not as bad as it is in other places. It's not as good as it can be now that I've been reading up on the topic more. This is what happens when you're on historic preservation listservs. You get to find out this sort of stuff.
Can I give one quick update on this? Because we're sort of advocating for one. Jackie and I did meet with the city, with Jan and city staff on the cultural resource inventory. And it's a lot to get our arms around. They're working with the museum. They have a grant to do digitization of all the materials from the cultural resource inventories that have been done over the decades. It's a pretty big project, and we're trying to figure out if we can, if the museum is going to use software that can use meta tags, so you can actually search through it. City of Seattle has this searchable database. You can do keywords like the name of an architect or 1950s. We were going to do a scan that wouldn't allow that, and so we're trying to figure out, it'll be part of our next topic with our historic promotion grants. We're in the process of trying to digitize this and make it publicly accessible on our website so people can read the cultural resource inventories instead of it just sitting in a file or boxes behind people's desks. And so part of that, it's just some energy building there because you guys have been asking for that for a while. It takes a while to get that done, and then a citywide historic context statement, whether you pick the areas that have never been surveyed or mid-century, which has never been surveyed, that's kind of a nice next step. Mm-hmm. Digitize what we already have, which no buildings older than 1930s are in there. and then have a new historic context statement for a potential new historic survey. Just wanted to put that out there, some momentum.
So it sounds like there's two things there. One is kind of an electronic infrastructure for a cultural resources inventory, and then the other one is actually updating the content that's in it. And is there, so it sounds like the first one, there's already some movement and planning on how to make that happen. Is there funding involved in that?
It could potentially be the Historic Promotion Grants funds. Just like you had a program, mm-hmm. a project this year to do the CAMAS interpretive panels, we went to the council and asked for money. It could potentially be that. We asked the council.
Well, honestly, I think that if we think of what our role is in this community, one of the big ones is making information accessible and making historic information accessible. So making that inventory accessible to the public sounds like a pretty high priority to me.
Yeah. And
does anyone else have any thoughts
but
on that?
That wouldn't be a CLG grant. Digitizing would be a historic promotion, potential historic promotion grant
mm-hmm.
funded, but then it kind of dovetails potentially if we got this funding from the CLG.
Because we'd create that system so that it could then accept new information.
So it's setting up for another inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So as part, the context statement is its own kind of, you know, research and putting this, you know, information together, and then kind of being able to guide what the inventory for that era is going to be. So it's kind of that first step that we could do to then lead into the actual, what the inventory is going to be for that, those 50s and mm-hmm. older, that range.
What are the age of the buildings that were eligible for the last one?
It was 99.
But it was not everything was inventory too, so you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Did you say 1899?
No.
1999.
It was in 1999, so it should be everything 49 and older.
Was it?
Conceivably could have been, but wasn't. Any more discussion? Do we have a motion for any of these ideas?
Sure.
I'm interested in the survey.
What she wants to
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Say it again. Sure.
Yeah.
Just it needs to be articulated maybe slower for my mind.
Sure. I think we can do it. Let's give you till March, okay? And we'll put maybe some proposals together.
Something fun.
Yeah.
And then
that you think is something that would.
We want everyone to fully understand what the options are.
We'll draft those two options because you kind of have two. One is the.
Because that sounds interesting. Because what I'm hearing though is there's going to be two kind of inventories, or to me that seems.
Yeah, so there have been inventories, but there are just pieces of paper sitting behind. Them.
Right.
So digitizing that.
Sorry. What I mean is, I'm sorry.
Okay.
What I meant was I thought I was hearing there are going to be two different.
Grants.
Systems that we're using, and they don't speak to each other. So that's why I'm, like, kind of hesitant, because I'm not really sure I understand. So, yes, whatever you put together, then that'll help me understand the parameters of.
I think we should have the staff give us two proposals that we can
yeah.
look at next month.
Yeah, fleshed out.
Vote on and approve.
Two or three, and give an opportunity for our commissioners who aren't here to also give you ideas that we could consider as well.
Okay.
Something in writing that we can.
Yeah.
And we do, I don't know when we should do this, but because March seems very full, but we do, I think we all need to get on the same page about the inventory, all the inventories we have, so that we know what we need to do. I mean, so because it's kind of confusing.
So I think the intention is that we have something in advance that we can review in advance so that in March we can have
quickly
a very quick discussion yeah. of it and a vote on which one we want to go for.
We have the two DAP presentations and then this discussion. We have guests, so I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we start at 5:30 so we can get this over before the long presentation.
You want to do that? Is everybody available?
I'm willing to.
I'm flexible, so yeah, I can.
All right.
Can you do that? Yeah.
That does require a vote.
Motion. And a legal notice.
Yes, so I'll entertain a motion to...
That we have the March meeting at 5:30.
I second.
All right. Any discussion? Didn't think so. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, let's go ahead. We have 20 minutes. So I think that does conclude that bullet item. I think the most timely thing that we have is the letter to the City of Vancouver, discussion of the draft that was sent out, and then potentially a vote to, I guess, ratify it. I will say that on my own part, I had a discussion with the City of Vancouver's attorney who is helping the commission, and my recusal from issues that have to do with the development at the Providence Academy site are limited to our judicial actions. So that would be anything that we make an actual decision on. Our legislative actions, which are the, basically everything else, the code, letters like this, he gave the green light for me to participate in. So just so that you are aware, that is the standing. We checked with the lawyer to make sure. So I will open discussion of the letter. Does the subcommittee want to?
Well, I've prepared a few notes. I don't want to waste a lot of everybody's time now. You could actually read it now. But so we formed a committee originally with Sean, Julie, and myself to prepare this letter in response to the city. I put together a draft, which I submitted to Julie and Sean, got comments back. And then Sean recused himself, and we added Alex to the subcommittee and removed Sean, sent it to Alex. He provided some additional comments. I incorporated both sets of comments, and what you have in front of you tonight incorporates the comments I received from everybody. In principle, what we discussed was, should we spend any more time debating the wisdom of their decision, or should we move on? And it was our collective decision that it was more important to move on to try and find a way to engage the city more proactively, perhaps, and improve the probability of our influencing further activities, not just at Providence Academy, but in any historic properties in the City of Vancouver. And this letter addresses that, including saying we think they should join us when the state comes down to give us a discussion, a seminar, whatever we call it, a workshop on the State Historic Preservation Act, and also agreeing that if they'd like to give us a primer on how they do land use planning, we'd be more than willing to participate in that. We were not all members felt that was necessary, but I think it's wise, the more interactions we can have face-to-face, the better chance we have of coming to a common understanding, common ground. So this is the letter. That's about all there is to it. I think it does represent a consensus of how we feel. The one thing I would say that as an observer, since I wasn't around when the first two presentations were made about the Providence Academy plan for Aegis, I think the lesson learned that we ought to draw from this is that it is very important that we clearly have voted, approved positions of the commission when we talk to the city about these kinds of things going forward. I think maybe a lesson learned just from how they responded to us in their letter, and again, it's easy for me to say, and I don't mean it as a criticism of the past, just as, again, just that, a lesson learned, and I think I would encourage us in the future to vote on all recommendations that we want to make to the communities or anybody about our preferences so that they have perhaps a little more weight in the considered planning, in the planning process. That's all I have. Do you want comments, changes,
approval, objection? Alex had requested that everybody sign it tonight. He doesn't want to be the only signature. If you don't agree, he'll do it. But so we added the nameplates for everybody. We didn't include Sean, but we now will. So if you do, we'll run down, print it out, and have everybody sign.
Okay. That's fine. I only had one comment on it. I thought that the letter was good where it ended up, and that's that in the second paragraph right there in the middle where consulting is in quotations, that our role is advisory and not consulting, to just use the language that's used in the code. Otherwise,
you want to change that to as an advisory party?
Just we asked this, the Historic Preservation Commission
as an advisory?
It's not an advisory. We play an advisory role in an advisory role, comma. Is that the right way? And clarify? Clarify the advisory role of the Historic Preservation Commission.
Okay. Comma, delete as a consulting party. Mm-hmm. So it would read and clarify the advisory role of the Historic Preservation Commission, comma, as noted in Heritage Overlay Code language.
Otherwise, I think it looks great. Any other comments?
I especially like the invitation to the March 4th, 2020 meeting, because as was noted in paragraph one about the clear difference of opinion, one of the ways that bridge can be crossed is to include the folks with whom we have a dispute. So I like that very much.
And they've already agreed to come.
Oh, have they? Well, very good. Well, in that case, I would like to move we accept and sign the letter as amended.
I think Michelle would like to make some comments first.
I like the letter. I think it's a very balanced response to the city. There was just one word I might like to change.
Okay.
Because the first time I read the letter, I thought, ooh, are we kind of getting a little bit, it's kind of like we start throwing that word problem around and people get defensive. So it's in the third paragraph. And
mm-hmm.
the second sentence, and it says, however, that is only part of the problem. I wonder if we could change that. However, that only addresses part of the issue. I wonder if we could put it in that kind of language so it's just as neutral as possible. However, that will only address part of the issue. That was just one thing that kind of jumped out. I, you know, would like to.
Will only address or only addresses?
However, that only addresses.
Only addresses.
Part of the issue. Just to keep it as balanced and as neutral as possible so people are as calm as possible in this discussion.
Personally, I'm okay with that change also.
I'd like to move we accept the letter and sign it with the two friendly amendments.
I second it.
Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 We're running to print that out right
now. All right. So while
thank
you all very much. So that passed unanimously.
You need this?
And you'll get Alex's and Rock's signatures.
And because it says present.
Okay.
Alex already agreed to come in tomorrow.
Okay, great. In respect for the public who has shown up to give public comment, I think we'll bump the two other topics to a future meeting and open the floor for public comment.
I'm green. Holly Chamberlain, wearing my Washington Trust for Historic Preservation hat. Sharon was kind enough to help me with a small project for Lobby Day coming up in March, and she asked me to let you all know about that. I'm sure you're all aware of the National Lobbying Day in Washington, D.C., organized by Preservation Action, where people come from all over the country to lobby for various issues related to historic preservation. Traditionally, Washington State has the largest delegation, hoping to, of course, keep that to be true this year. But one of the things the Washington Trust does is organize information from every legislative district in Washington. And so this year we'll be highlighting the Blair Building in Washougal as an example of a property that used special valuation and is from a smaller community that doesn't have a lot of historic buildings in it, especially not ones that are designated. And Heidi and Bruce Kramer, the owners, have sent some photographs, and Sharon kindly directed me to some of the special valuation numbers. So this is the property that will be traveling with Washington Trust representatives to D.C. for the annual lobby day. Mm-hmm.
This is a building that building that you approved special evaluation of in 2018. Mm-hmm. We don't get those very often, so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
Any questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Holly.
Mm-hmm. When is it?
Lobby Day is middle of March. I can't give you the exact dates. There are still spaces available, and there's financial aid available for people who are interested in going. And you can look at the Washington Trust website to preserve preservewa.org if that's of interest. At least, technically the deadline was the end of January, but there's always a varying number of people who apply, and there may be some flexibility with the funding.
Well, I go back there on business mm-hmm. a lot.
Sure,
so
sure.
So possibly I'd be there during that time frame. It wouldn't cost you anything.
That would be fine, too. But we do have a very generous donor who does help out every year and is very interested in having as many people go as possible. So it helps with the basics, the airfare and lodging. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Holly. Do you have any other public comment? Go ahead and turn your mic on. Thank you.
My name's Rob Fried. I want to throw out another suggestion as being on the advisory board for the Heritage Farm of maybe applying. I was thinking of having the county encouraging county parks applying for CLG money for either planning phase for the interpretive trail at the farm, or maybe following up on the historic building assessment of maybe starting plans on restoring one of the buildings.
Great.
So I'm going to talk to the county and see if that might fit into the application, the money. Secondly, I do have concerns about the Gateway project and the viability of the Weber building. I believe it might be the last or one of the last industrial type buildings left, and I think it's critical to the project to retain that building, and I'm worried that with a possible convention center expansion, it seems like it's logical they would expand to the south, and so I'm thinking that the Weber building might be a target of the expansion. As I knew maybe back in 2005, I think the interior of the building was pretty intact, that there were some machine works that were there. I don't know if it's been taken out, but if some of the apparatus is still in place, I think that would increase the significance of the building. So I would encourage the commission to push for or encourage the city to maintain that structure in place.
Thank you. I'd say if you would like the county to consider that idea, might write something up to send to them that they might include to Great. All right. Do we have any other public comment?
One more.
Okay, we have one more thing.
So I handed out those little cards that three of you have. Those are your CCHM memberships, and we were waiting for some more, so we'll hand them out when we get them. And I will email you the member benefits, but it's pretty expensive. Each month you get free admission to different area museums, including things like Chinese Garden, the Oregon Coast Aquarium, the World Forest. There's a lot. So the benefit from the HPC's membership.
It's very nice.
So we'll get some more for those.
You don't need to get one from me. I already.
Oh, well, then
I passed mine along. Okay. Yeah.
I did want to apologize for our first presentation. We had a miscommunication with the plans that he referred to that we will send you. We were waiting. We received them, but Jan had told us that she wasn't sure what he wanted to present. So we were waiting to hear back from him whether or not what he wanted to present or send to you. So we do have them, and we'll forward them to you so you have them as well.
Thank you. So we have 5 minutes. Are there any pressing issues that anyone would like to bring up in those 5 minutes?
Are we going to have food next week? I mean, in March? No, I'm just kidding.
Do you want to move the demo discussion until April? Because March is full.
March is going to be impossible.
March is going to be impossible. And I would rather have a good discussion of it than I mean, we're not timely at this point, so.
Put it on the April agenda?
Yeah.
All right. Nice job.
Anything else? I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We're not going to do